Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Zero Screen Review Sports Podcast on this first of 2016. As we discuss the world of sports and pop culture, as always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Giro, or go to Instagram and follow me there at Willow Giro Quinn. A lot going on today in the world of sports. First of all, you had the Stanley Cup, Pittsburgh, San Jose, 0-0. Pittsburgh, of course, leads the series 1-0, trying to take a commanding 2-0 lead over the Sharks. You have one day away, of course, from the NBA Finals, Golden State and Cleveland. We'll talk more about that over the course of the program. I'm supposed to be joined by one Javon Alford, who will talk about that. The finals, and also the collapse that was the Oklahoma City collapse, and what could be made of that, and where Mr. Durant might end up. So you have a lot. You have that going on. You have the baseball with Boston. You have Mookie Betts has homered twice tonight. He now has five home runs in his last two games. I believe it's five home runs in like six at bats. Something just off the charts. Boston's offense is just the best in baseball right now. They have three or four of the top hitters in the American League right now with Betts, Bradley, Jackie Bradley Jr., of course, Bogarts, and of course, Big Poppy, who is going to end up having one of the great swan songs of all time. As this is supposed to be his last year, he's going out with a bang, leads the American League. Leads the major leagues in RBIs, and it's just been tremendous this year. But again, Boston has been just a great, great offensive team as they are tied with Baltimore 5-5. So you had that going on. But we're going to begin with the situation that's ongoing in Baylor University. Ken Starr steps down as a chancellor. To no one's surprise, it's one of those situations where you can either fall on the sword or the sword can get pushed through you. Starr, he won't starve. He has all kinds of credentials. He's going to teach law at Baylor, but in wake of that situation, everybody had a clean house. I mean, Bryles is gone, athletic director is gone. Now you see Kent Starr is gone. When something like that goes down. Sexual assault and things that stuff comes out. There's no, it's house cleaning time without question. I think, Starr, for the most part, I didn't hear his entire interview, but I heard parts of it on the Outside the Lines that they had with ESPN. And for the most part, he took responsibility for it. There was no running away from it, but he did say one thing in terms of that I vehemently disagree with, and saying that this is something that we basically said that this is something that we need to put this behind us. Those are his exact words, and couldn't disagree more. If you have a daughter or a niece or a sister, do you want them anywhere near Baylor University? Like, seriously. The problem is, this goes on all over the place. This is happening at one too many major college football places, major power, in terms of major college football universities. This happens all the time. It does not get reported at times, or situations where the universities find new and creative ways to just cover it up. This is an example of just how the power, just how the power of winning, the pressure of winning, and you know, you hear that term in sports a lot, win at all costs. This is the definition of winning at all costs. Because there's no question in my mind that Art Briles turned another cheek and was as big of a, you know, to me, played probably the biggest part, was the biggest part of this, with this happening in terms of these guys. You know these guys are bad guys to begin with, but they can help you win a couple extra games. They can get you to a New Year's Day Bowl. Hey, they might even get you in a BCS final, the BCS Final Four. So, you know, Briles, again, was willing to take that risk. You know, again, I'm not saying that Art Briles knew that these guys were going to do this, but he knew that the possibility existed. He knew that there were character issues in terms of a lot of these players. So if you're Art Briles, you know, nobody knew who you were before you got the Baylor job. He's done a tremendous job at building up that program into a powerhouse. Baylor is not Oklahoma. They'll never be Oklahoma. They'll never be Texas. You know, they'll never be, and I know they're not in the same conference anymore, but in terms of proximity, they'll never be Nebraska. They'll never be on that level. But to get the program to where he's gotten it is an absolutely remarkable job. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And you see the, you know, the after effects of him, you know, being fired. You got recruit, they're losing recruits left and right. But again, was it worth it ultimately for Art Briles? Was it worth, you know, compromising? And I gotta think that Art Briles is a good guy per se. Never had any off the field as far as him having any character issues, as far as some things that he's done personally that I know of. But again, the pressure to win, talent, winning covers up. When they say winning is the ultimate deodorant, it covers up a lot of things. Well, this was one thing that winning, even winning, could not cover up. And I'm glad that it got exposed. Three 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Jarrell Quinn Review. The Cyril Jarrell Quinn Review Sports Podcast. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of Cyril Jarrell Quinn Review Sports Podcast. If you're at the Olympics right now, you have to be a little bit concerned. The Olympics are less than 2 months away, coming in mid to late August. There's already been, you know, just this Zika virus scare that is, you know, that's plagued a lot. You know, it's not big domestically. I mean, there have been a couple of isolated cases in America, but you know, today you had apparently Francisco Rodriguez, the Detroit closer, come out and said that he acquired it during the offseason, and he basically took 2 months for him to recover, all kinds of joint aches, and it was basically living hell for him over the course of that couple of months trying to recover from that. Paul Gasol came out and said that he's thinking about not going, not participating in the Olympics for Spain, and Rory McIlroy just flat out just pulled out of it. Now, here's the, if you're Paul Gasol, listen, you've won medals all over the world. You've won championships. You're going to the Hall of Fame. Really not a big deal. And I know, again, international basketball overseas is big in Spain, Europe in general, France, those places like that. It's huge over there, like even more so than say, the NBA Finals. But, again, we're talking about a guy who's going to Hall of Fame who has two rings in his back pocket, and who was also won as a silver medal back in 2008. That's one thing. Rory McIlroy, still very young, what, 26, 27, if that. I think he's only like 26. Again, Olympic golf, not a big deal as in comparison to the majors and the Ryder Cup and things of that nature, the President's Cup and match play, things of that nature. The dilemma is going to come for the rank and file athlete who this could be his or her last shot at participating in the Olympics, or for the stakes even be stakes being even higher at possibly winning a medal. So for that, for that guy or girl, they have a major decision on their hands. And I hear the fact that athletes are going to be protected. I don't know how you can get this by, it's a sexually transmitted, it can be sexually transmitted, it can be through mosquito bites. It's not like it's hard to get, per se. Like this, something, it sounds like this is something that can be acquired, that's contagious to a certain extent. And again, it's still not too much information on it. We have a decent amount of information on it, but we don't have all the information on it. So again, if there's somebody who's traveling to Brazil, again, if I was an athlete, I wouldn't even dream about going to Brazil. It just wouldn't happen. I'll watch the Olympics on television. But again, for that guy, who this may be their only chance at being participating in the Olympics, it's a tough decision. It's not just a clear cut decision for like it is for a Paul Gasol or for a Rory McIlroy. No score. Pittsburgh, San Jose. Pittsburgh's on a power play. I think Pittsburgh's going to win this series. I think they're a better team. I think they're a deeper team. They got hot at the right time. I know the Western Conference is regarded as the stronger of the two conferences, but Pittsburgh, again, this seems like to be their year. Like Pittsburgh, like they're not dependent on Crosby, not dependent on Malkin. They have a very, very deep and talented Pittsburgh hockey club. So, again, still a long ways to go. Just game two of the series. San Jose, that's played well over the course of this postseason. Just think Pittsburgh is just a little deeper in terms of type of personnel that they have. 347-215-6180. When we return, we'll tell you why Jack Nicklaus is not happy right now. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the 0-0 Coin Review. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review. It's not too often that Jack Nicklaus gets upset or gets annoyed. Normally Nicklaus, is very dignified and very gracious, and when you hear him talking even about Tiger, he still is convinced that Tiger's going to come back and win majors and do well and so on and so on. So when you hear Jack get annoyed, it kind of grabs your attention. So apparently, and again, I don't follow golf to a point where I'm watching every tournament, but I do watch the majors, and I feel like I have a pretty good grasp of who the great players are and who the top players are. But I didn't know that there was a big three in golf. I didn't know that existed. Well, apparently, Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, and Rory McIlroy are the quote-unquote new big three of golf. And that, perplexes me, and also has bothered Jack, who is a guy who grew up playing against some of the greatest golfers that, ever. This guy competed against Arnold Palmer, Gary Player, Tom Watson, legends. Legends. Lee Trevino's. Those guys were all-time greats. So his definition of a big three versus what was being talked about as a big three in golf is going to be a little different. It really is. I remember in golf had a semi-big four, even though Tiger was, to me, clearly head and shoulders above everybody else. But golf, you had Tiger, and then you had, as names go blank to me, you had Tiger, you had Mickelson, you had Vijay Singh, you had Retief Goosen, and I'm leaving one out, Ernie Els. So maybe I added one extra in there. There was a big four in golf. So Woods, Singh, Mickelson, and Els. Yes. That was a big four in, I would say, the mid 2000s, like early to mid 2000s, where those guys were winning tournaments left and right and dominating the sport. Even though, again, Tiger was always, to me, was heads and shoulders above, but those other guys were very good. When Tiger didn't win a tournament or a major, those guys would pick up the pieces. And that was a stretch to call it a big four. Tennis, you had a big three in Djokovic, Nadal. That was a big three. It never was a big four. Like, Murray was never on that level. Never. It will never be on that level. So that was a legit big three. Three of the greatest players in the history of the sport. There's no big three in golf right now. Because there's not a lot of separation from Dave, Spieth, McIlroy, and the rest of the field. Matter of fact, if I'm Bubba Watson, who has two majors of his own, I'm saying, really? I can play with anybody when I'm healthy. Again, those guys are, you want to say those guys are the best in the world right now? Fine, in particular Spieth and Day. When is the last time Rory McIlroy hasn't won a major in like, what, 2 years? Like, since 2014, I believe. So he hasn't won a major in almost 2 years, in roughly about 2 years. So you got to be careful when you try to create, these so-called big, even basketball, like Cleveland's big three, it's not really. More like a big, maybe one and a half. Maybe you have LeBron, half of Kyrie, and Kevin Love is a glorified, glorified role player. Not a star player. Boston had a big three. Lakers had a big three. It gets tossed around a lot with certain duos or combinations. I'm glad Jack Nicklaus called out his golf compadres. I'm glad he called it out, because there's no big three in professional golf right now. There's not. 347-215-6180. We'll be back on this latest edition of Cyril Jarrell Quinn Review Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Is your call number on the latest edition of the Cyril Jarrell Quinn Review. Still nothing. No score for Pittsburgh and San Jose. About 4 minutes left in the first period of Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final. Should do a decent number. With Pittsburgh being one of the most, recognizable teams in the NHL, Sidney Crosby, who basically is the face of the NHL. I don't know how many people, San Jose has been a gritty team over the last few years. I don't know how many superstars San Jose has. I know they have some main players, but I don't know how many true superstars they have. But Pittsburgh's name recognition alone should generate some decent ratings. It's hockey, it's Stanley Cup. It's never going to receive a big rating. Just too many things going on. It's just, too many things going on even before the NBA Finals get started. And, of course, you will have the NBA Finals starting tomorrow. Teams practice today. Golden State is considered to be heavy favorites over the Cleveland Cavaliers, 5.5 in terms of was the last line that I saw for the game tomorrow. I think the series, if you want to know why Golden State is a heavy favorite, besides the matchup, teams that reach this point, historically, teams that win this amount of games, 65 or 67 and over, don't lose once they get to the finals. Now, you've had 12 teams win 67 or more games during a regular season. Only the 2007 Mavericks, the 73 Celtics, and the 2016, and this year's San Antonio Spurs, did not win a championship. And none of those teams reached the NBA Finals. Spurs lost in the second round, Celtics lost in the Eastern Conference Finals, and the Mavericks lost, of course, that famous first-round series to the Golden State Warriors back in 2007, one of the great upsets in NBA history. So that is probably the biggest reason why Golden State is such a heavy favorite over Cleveland. You're looking at it from a historic perspective as far as teams win this amount of games, win this 73 games. This is one of all time great teams. Now, the thing to keep in mind about that is, number one, Golden State has not been great in the postseason. They have not been overpowering in the postseason. Like, it's not one time that you've looked at Golden State and said, hey, nobody is beating this team. There's no way this team is unbeatable. I thought that if Steph Curry came back, as long as Steph Curry was relatively healthy, that they were the team to beat. I still think that. They certainly deserve to be favored over Cleveland in my eyes. But they can be got. Cleveland wins this series. I'm not going to sit up here and say that this is, we consider a major upset, to be honest with you. But again, if you want to know why Golden State is such a heavy favorite, look no further than just the history of basketball in terms of what these caliber of teams, as far as their win totals and point differential, have done once they've gotten to the NBA Finals. They don't lose, for the most part. They don't lose. They do not lose. Is your call number. Of course, one of the biggest questions going to game one tomorrow will be who starts for Golden State, Harrison Barnes or Andre Iguodala. If I'm Steve Kerr, and again, Steve Kerr is a lot, you know, knows his team 10,000 times more than I know him, and understand, you know, knows a lot more about basketball than I do. But if I'm Steve Kerr, I probably would start off with Harrison Barnes. Just feeling like Iguodala is better equipped to come off the bench, you know, if LeBron, you know, goes crazy. Last year, of course, we saw that Iguodala was by far and away their best defensive player on LeBron. It wasn't even close. You know, they tried to throw, you know, Klay Thompson at him, of course, Barnes, Draymond a little bit, but ultimately, Iguodala was that guy. Again, I think you want to try to get, you know, again, it's game one, seven game series. You want to try to establish some confidence. You know, you want to give Harrison Barnes some confidence early in the series, so that, you know, you don't totally lose him if he comes off the bench and then doesn't play. Like, if he comes off the bench and doesn't play well, I mean, there's a chance you could lose him for the series. I mean, like, mentally. Again, he responded well to it last year in games, I want to say 5 and 6. Harrison, 1 through 4, he did not play well. 2, 3, well, basically 2, 3, and 4. He had a decent, I remember him having a pretty good game one, struggling in those middle games and ending the series, you know, games 5 and 6, playing well. Playing pretty good basketball, but those middle games in particular, he did not play well at all. And you know, after game, they went to the small lineup. They went to the lineup of death in game four when they were down 2-1, which changed the entire series because Cleveland had no answer for it. None. Joining the program, Javon Offert, who of course is a writer for Real GM, does some NFL work with him. Also, of course, you remember him on past programs doing a lot of the college basketball in terms of the picks and the tournament with us. How you doing, Javon?
Hey, man. Sorry about that. I had some things to take care of, but I'm glad to be back on the show. Like you said, I've been on here talking some college hoops, and now I'm in here talking some NBA. So we're coming full circle.
Yes, no question about it. Again, a day away from the NBA Finals. Before we look ahead to tomorrow mm-hmm. night in this series, which is going to be, hopefully it's going to be epic in terms of what, you know, what's on the line. Who do you blame the most when it came with, in terms of Oklahoma City? Durant or Westbrook?
Wow, that's a tough one. That's a tough one because both of them play integral roles in them failing the fall to actually to lose this. But I have to say, oh, this is so hard. I gotta put it on Kevin Durant because this is his team. As much as everybody wants to make it say that this is Russell Westbrook's team and he's the guy that gets everything going and generates the offense and this, that, and the third. This is Kevin Durant's team. And he disappeared. I mean, both of those guys disappeared in game 6. I mean, but that was more the credit of Andre Iguodala and his defense that he played against those guys, two guys, which was pretty much the best defense you're going to get and really taking them out of the flow of the game. But in game 7, you know, Russell was still pretty much doing his thing. For the most part, you know, he was getting to the basket, doing everything he could. Kevin Durant, on the other hand, he just wasn't there. And, I mean, we saw that on the bench, you know, he was kind of, you know, getting angry and you know, snapping back at the coaches, and you know, he for a long part he was held without no points until he went on his little run in the fourth quarter. But by the time he went on his little run in the fourth quarter, it was just a little bit too late. So I got to say, Kevin Durant takes the fall for Game 7.
So I agree. I agree 1,000%. We both agree that they lost that series in Game 6. I mean, Golden State was on the ropes. That you 8 points fourth quarter at home. You got to put that series away. I mean, you got that's all there is to it. And I know Clay. You know, Clay went crazy, and eventually Curry caught fire and finished him off. But if you're Durant, and I watched that Game 7 with a couple of friends, and we just, you know, you could tell Westbrook was waiting for Durant to kind of take the bull by the horns. He wanted to try to take over, but he's like, all right, let me try to get Kevin going. And it just never happened. Like, it just seemed like, I don't know if Durant was tired. I don't know if I don't know if he was trying to, like, compensate for, like, taking 62 shots in two games between games 5 and 6, as far as trying to get other guys involved. I don't know. Like, he just – again, I don't know what Durant – I don't know. I would love to – like, it would be very interesting to hear about his thoughts on that game and his approach. I didn't get any of that in the post game. I got basically next to nothing from him. And you know, you're not going to get anything out of Westbrook in terms of those interviews. But it just seemed to me, I don't know if he was just waiting for the game. I'm like, dude, you know, you're on the road. You know that Golden State can hit you with a barrage at any moment. They can explode. That's why that 13-point lead was just, you know, was fool's gold. Like, it never felt comfortable. Once Golden State got the 6 at halftime, you knew they were in good shape the way that game was going. But I just wonder with Durant, you know, I really thought Durant was over that. Considering what he did in the San Antonio series, that 41-point game, which in essence saved their season, and that Game 4, I understand he hadn't been shooting well in the Golden State series, but, you know, you felt his presence on the court. And he had been playing some of the best defense of his life and rebounding. So that you could kind of live with some of his poor shooting based on the defense that he had been playing on the switch-offs with Curry in particular. But I honestly would say, man, I did not see this coming for a Game 7 for a guy as talented as him, a guy who's been in the league as long as he has been. Were you surprised? Were you surprised by his performance in Game 7?
I was surprised, because like you said, and I'm surprised not only at his performance, but the entire team's performance. You know, a lot of analysts said that, you know, that the Thunder were a more talented team than the Golden State Warriors. And you could say that, but at a few positions, obviously the Warriors went at, and there might be a tie at a few, but overall, a lot of analysts said that the Thunder were the better talent, were the more talented team. But that didn't matter. And I agree with the one point where you said about, you know, could there have been fatigue? I definitely think fatigue got involved. Because one thing that we noticed, and you probably noticed this too, in games 5, 6, and 7, the Thunder tried to dictate the same pace that the Warriors dictate. They try to play the Warriors' pace. You can't do that because the Thunder can't do that because they do not have the horses that the Warriors do. The Warriors, as we saw in Game 7, you know, Steve Kerr is going down the bench, pulling out most spades. I mean, Leandro, we even had a Leandro Barbosa sighted. You know, he's just pulling guys out there to, you know, you just run them out there. You can go 9-10 deep. Billy Donovan, on the other hand, he's running, the only two guys really in the last few games that really got any play
he's running about 8 deep, 7 to 8. He cut his rotation, which was fine.
Right.
I agree with him cutting his rotation. That was the way to go.
Yeah, and like you say, you definitely had to do that because obviously none of those other guys are going to get the job done. Singler's not going to pose a threat. Morrow really isn't going to pose a threat. Cameron Payne's only a rookie. They can't do anything with that. But the guys that they did have, you know, they were, you know, they did with their job done. Cantor did his thing. Waiters is Waiters, you know. He's like J.R. Smith. Either they're on when they're on and they're off when they're off. But I think for Kevin Durant, I think, like you said, I think Russell Westbrook was waiting for KD to – like you said, take the game by his horns. Have that killer instinct to put the dagger in the team. I mean, we all know Russell Westbrook can do it. I mean, we saw that third quarter performance that he had earlier in the series where he just literally put the team on his back and he was not going to let them lose. Kevin Durant, on the other hand, he kind of disappeared. He kind of, I don't want to say it, but he shrunk in the moment. And you can't have that. Not when you lost already two games. You lost at home. Like you said, even though he was up by six in game 7, we all knew what was coming because we saw the same story and the same picture manifest themselves in game 6 where the Warriors were down 5 and they just came out with the barrage. And what happened there? They came out with a barrage. I think the Warriors outscored the Thunder in the third quarter 29-12. When you do that in the game, you're going to win. And that's just how it is. And I think for Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, I think this is going to eat at them for a very long time because they let another finals opportunity where they could possibly beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in the finals get that chance. Who knows how long they'll get that chance to get back to this point.
No question about it. Moving on to the finals. Now, we all know that this is really not a rematch considering who was there versus who wasn't there. And also considering that, and this is something that hasn't been talked about enough, Golden State is just a much better team than what they were last year. Like, they're just better all around. In particular, their core three with Curry, Thompson, and Green. Thompson, I think, arguably has been the best player in the playoffs this year. I mean, with him and LeBron probably being neck and neck, but Thompson, he's been spectacular. If you're Cleveland, you've played with pace. You have been the most efficient offensive team in the playoffs, arguably the best offensive team in the playoffs. You shot all these threes leading up to this point. But last year, when you gave Golden State a headache, it was because of your defense, and it was because of Adelabadova. It was because of Tristan Thompson and being able to switch off. And they end up running out of gas, and, of course, we know they didn't have enough talent to finish the job, but they really gave Golden State headaches with that defensive mindset and that defensive mentality. Now you have Love and Kyrie Irving back, who we know are superior offensive players, but we know both of them are, to say bad defensively, I think would be being kind. They're terrible defensive players. And numbers, it's true. I mean, just look at the numbers. Look at their plus minuses when they're on the floor. There's a reason why Kevin Love doesn't sometimes finish in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. So what, for Tyronn Lue, how do you manage that aspect of it? Because you need their scoring. What style are you trying to play against Golden State? You know you're going to have to make threes. You know that. You can't get outscored like Oklahoma City was, got destroyed in the last two games behind the three-point line. And you have the capabilities to do that. But are you going to – do you want to run with Golden State, or do you want to go have it be a more methodical half-court execution, which Golden State can do that as well. But more – but do you want to get into a track meet with Golden State if you're Cleveland?
That's a great question. That's actually something I've been pondering, the past few days. I think I read a story on Cleveland.com by Chris Haynes, and Tyronn Lue said, they're going to push it. But at the same time, say they were Oklahoma City, does Cleveland, do we have the guys to get into a track meet? I mean, Cleveland's not necessarily a young team now. I mean, they're running with Richard Jefferson off the bench. I don't know if Richard's going to be able to keep up even with an Iguodala coming off the bench and running. And like you said, do they want to run or do they want to slow it down? And for them, I think they got to slow it down because if you want to trade three-point shots and go up and down the court and trade three-point shots, you don't want to do that with Golden State because Golden State shows you that even though they might miss a couple of three-point shots, that all they need to do is just hit one. And once they hit one, the entire game, it's like a snowball effect. It just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah, it's funny because Like last year, you know, when they played, we knew that they just didn't have enough offense eventually, and they were going to wear down. They were running out of bodies. I mean, Shumpert was banged up along with me and also Kevin Love being out. But again, I look at that. They made the game nasty. LeBron kind of like was a quarterback controlling the possessions. They shortened the game. They shortened possessions. To me, the more possessions that are in the game, that favors to me the better team. And I think we both agree that Golden State is from top to bottom the better team.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be very interesting because, like you said, Lou has pushed them to play with pace. I mean, they're definitely playing faster than what they were under David Black. They're more wide open. They're more, compared to what they were in the playoffs last year when it was like watching, it was like a dentist appointment with how their style of play. And that's how they had to play. I mean, they just had no weapons outside of LeBron and a bunch of guys named Joe. But, this season they've been free-flowing, up and down the court, moving the ball. I wonder if that style lends itself against a Golden State team, which, let's be honest, Oklahoma City has horses. Like, Oklahoma City has the best athletes probably in the NBA. So they had the horses, to me, to run with Golden State. As a matter of fact, there was a point in the series where they were outrunning Golden State, amazingly, because they had those kind of athletes. You just mentioned something. I don't think Cleveland has those athletes. I mean, Love is not a great athlete. Channing Frye is not a great athlete. I mean, outside Thompson and LeBron, I mean, even Kyrie Irving is not a great athlete per se. He doesn't get by on – he doesn't overwhelm you with his athleticism. It's with his ball handling and ability to finish at the rim without dunking. So again, I wonder what their style of play is going to be, and also wonder what is going to be. Again, we're going to have to watch the games to get a sense of this, of course. But if you were to guess what their closing lineup would be, what is going to be their Cleveland's crunch time lineup that gives off a better balance of offense and defense?
That's a good one. That's a good one. Obviously, they're going to run Kyrie at the point, so we already got that. LeBron's going to be in there. Tristan Thompson's going to be in there because it's like we've seen in the playoffs, I think, especially, in the OKC Golden State series, and even in Cleveland-Toronto, rebounding is key. Rebounding will earn you a lot of extra possessions, which, can be the difference maker in the long run of a game and in a series. So you got to think those three guys will be out there on the court. So then you're saying, okay, if you got Tristan Thompson out there with LeBron, do you want to go Kevin Love, or do you want to go Channing Frye, And then do you want to go J.R. Smith or do you want to go Shumpert? Because J.R. is going to give you the offense, but Iman is going to give you the defense. So that's where Tyronn Lue, I think, is going to have that big decision. If we're down, do we put out our offensive shooters? Do we say, we need Channing Frye out there. We need J.R. Smith out there. We're down. We need to go try to attack now. Or do they say, okay, maybe we'll go Shumpert because we need somebody to slow down Klay Thompson. And I don't think nobody can contain him, but they're going to try to slow him down. So I think I have three out of the five. I just don't know what they're going to do at the other two spots.
Definitely, of course, LeBron, Kyrie, and Thompson. The question is LeBron going to be playing the four or is LeBron going to be at the three, depending on whether or not they use Love or Frye. Would you envision a lineup where LeBron is at the four? Like, can you see them going? If they go no Love, and decide to go with Frye, have Kyrie at the point. Kyrie, Shumpert, Frye, LeBron, and Thompson, and where they could play, where they probably, or do you think that, or do you think you have to play Tom, you have to play at the, you have to automatically play Frye at the four and let LeBron be. I mean, LeBron's going to be where he's going to be as far as ball handling, but in terms of like his, where, who he defends.
You know what? I think you might see LeBron playing some four, to be honest with you. You know, because
I think he's going to have to play four in this series. I think because that lineup of death is, you know, again, I know they had some struggles in the OKC series, but that lineup gives Cleveland, to me, all kinds of matchup problems. I think I think that lineup, you almost have to play LeBron at the four.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because like you said, that lineup of death gave OKC problems, and even though people say, well, Cleveland got their own lineup of death, this is a totally different lineup of death when you're facing in Golden State, and Draymond Green, you know, that's going to be a huge matchup, you know, having LeBron going against Draymond and vice versa, because, you know, Draymond poses a lot of problems, you know. You got him, you know. You got him running up and down the court, you know, making an impact in all three facets of the game. You know, you got to have LeBron matching him up too. And I think you will definitely see LeBron at that four, you know, going against Draymond. And you might see him at the three sometimes, which you might lend yourself to. Now he's got to go against Iguodala. So he's going to get his battles on both sides. But I think if he's at the four, you're going to see him and Draymond go out there really good. And I think that's going to be it. Great battle to watch.
So ultimately, who do you like, and how many games does this series go?
Wow, I think this series is, like you said, I think it's going to be an epic series. I think this is going to be a great finals. To be honest, I think I have Golden State winning, and my gut is telling me Golden State in seven. For some reason, I've been leaning towards six, but I like Golden State in seven. I think this is going to be a hard-fought, duke-it-out battle for seven games.
I can definitely see it. Tell me the one thing that will happen for Cleveland to win. What if Cleveland wins this series, they'll win it because what?
Their three-point shooting. Their three-point shooting will help them win it.
I mean, I think I completely agree. I think they have to make three. I think they have to make threes in this series. I think the idea that people say, well, they can't get into a three-point shootout with Golden State, that's not the point. You have to make threes. Unless you have Tim Duncan or Shaq in his prime, you have to make threes. Like they don't have Tim Duncan or Shaq in their prime. Unless you have that kind of post player that you can throw the ball to, you have to make threes. In this series, you have to make threes. Even, you know, it was amazing about that Oklahoma City series. I think that, you know, Oklahoma City at times dominated the free throw line. Mm-hmm. They generated points off turnovers, but it still was not enough to compensate for that 3-point shot. Like it just, like, you know, those two guys, man. I mean, Clay and Curry, right? And I, like, those two guys are just unreal with that 3-point shot. I mean, they can get hot at any moment.
You telling me. Game six told the story
I really think that's just having those two guys is just, it's almost, having those two guys to me is the difference in the series. I think if you're going to beat Golden State, you're going to beat them in the conference finals. That they were kind of right for the picking. Now that they've gotten to the finals, I just think they're going to be a monster to beat in the finals. I do, again, like you, I do expect a tremendous series. I like Golden State in six. I could definitely see it going seven, but I think this is going to be obviously a highly contested series, a very closely contested, a lot of close games, a lot of up and down action. Again, ultimately, man, you got those two guys that can give you 40 in a given night. It's just, I mean, like, Curry does not have to play great. I mean, that's the scary thing. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to be Superman for them to win. And that, you know, and having a guy like Iguodala who can just, you know, I'm glad you brought it up. Like, his defense, the one thing, you know, we're talking about the Durant and the Westbrook collapsing and what Oklahoma City did not do. Iguodala's defense in that series, and those last two games in particular, was just off the charts. He made plays. He stripped Westbrook. He locked up Durant. I mean, he just made some plays, especially in that game six, that were just incredible. Like, it was ridiculous, some of the plays he made defensively, guarding, you know, two of the most lethal offensive players in the world. Yeah, that, I mean, he's a perfect guy to have on your team. I mean, he's that intangible glue guy that all these championship teams have had over the course of their history. And he's even better. Like, he's even better than a guy like Robert Ory or Derek Fisher. Like, he just got, you know, this guy was an all-star.
Yeah, so, and he was Finals MVP last year. So
exactly. Even though I had some issues. I thought Curry should have been MVP myself. I understand right. Iguodala did have his impact. I thought Curry, the last three games, Curry was tremendous in the finals. I probably thought he should have won it, but Iguodala was great in that series. His defense, I mean, everybody talks about with LeBron numbers. LeBron would average 60 if Iguodala didn't guard him. Wasn't guarding him. I mean, his defense was unreal, and he scored, you know, still averaged 16. So we'll see what happens. Right. I'm looking forward to it. We'll look forward to talking to you over the course of the finals, man. Thanks for coming on.
All right, definitely. I'm glad to be back. I'm be back on talking to you.
All right, no question about it. Javon Offord, thanks to Javon Offord for joining the program. Of course, again, did some great work with us back talking college basketball. Certainly knows the NBA well. Writes for, again, Real GM. Real GM, which is, you know, does a lot of work. A website, a real popular website in terms of sports and NBA, NFL, and really, really all sports, but in particular the NBA and NFL. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Review Sports Podcast. I will catch you next time. Have a great evening. So long.